Greetings to each of you again in the precious name of Jesus. It's been a pleasure to be here and worship with y'all. Learn to know some new ones and put some faces to some names. And again, an invitation to visit at Leola when you have opportunity. Appreciated with the devotional that was shared. Are you hearing or are you listening? Where we are pretty blind at times, and maybe a lot of times. May we be open to God's directions, God's leading in our lives, tonight, tomorrow, as the days come forth, as God gives them to us. When Brother Ronald called me, I guess he actually texted me a number of weeks ago, I don't remember exactly when that was. Actually, it's probably a number of months ago. He asked me to share here. I asked him what they had in mind. And he said, well, I didn't really have anything, but I thought maybe it would be nice to hear the Winter Bible School message I preached here at the last region of Winter Bible School. So I was planning to do that here this evening. And that is, the title of that message was Relating to the Rise in Socialism. And I hope that title doesn't scare off too many of you at once. Because we get into the isms, that can be a little bit intimidating for some folks, but we'll try to keep it simple this evening. Wondering, those of you that know what that word is, and we'll get to it a little bit, is this a relevant subject? Is this important? Does it even have any bearing on our lives? And I think if you're aware, somewhat aware with the world we live in and the direction it's going, I think you would have to conclude that it is very relevant. And what does that mean to us as God's people, those endeavoring to carry the torch of faithfulness in our generation and pass it on to the next? What does that mean for us? What does that mean for you? What does that mean for me? How does that look? In some ways, the future at times can look scary, can look intimidating, because we're going to be grappling with things that we just don't know. And if anything, the last couple years has taught us, probably quite a number of things, so we don't know what could lie just around the corner. 2020, when we started off that year, we didn't know what that year was. We had no idea what that year was, what was coming at us that year, did we? I still remember an older gentleman that comes into our sales office at times had picked up on this thing, the whole COVID thing back when it was starting to rise over in Asia. And I still remember him telling us that, you know what, this is going to come over and it's going to affect every single one of us. He said, I ran the numbers and what they're saying over there. If that's the case, there's going to be a lot of people dying here in the States. He said, it's going to totally turn our way of life. I don't know if he said upside down, but it's going to affect us. And we laughed at him, not right mockingly to his face, but we kind of chuckled about it. And, well, it's just old Red. He's just talking again. And a number of months later, after it did come upon us, I went back to him and said, Red, you remember when you told us that? Yeah, he said, I remember. I said, you remember we laughed at you? Yeah, he remembers that too. I said, well, you were right and we were wrong. So we don't know what lies ahead. But history does give us a little bit of a background to what could possibly lie ahead and how do we relate to that. And I recognize this evening that I don't know what the future holds. But we are living in an increasingly socialistic country, and what does that mean for the people of God? And I think that's the burden of the subject tonight. The title would indicate that it's a negative thing, and I think probably most of us would tend to agree with that. If you know what it is, you understand what it means, but that could be a bad thing, and it's also increasing. To start, I'd like to turn to a passage of Scripture. Turn with me to Isaiah 42. My first point is the sovereignty of God. And I'd just like to take some time to just look at this, because I think as we think of future, as we think of unknowns, as we think of things that perhaps may frighten us a little bit, cause us unrest, I think it's important that we take a look at God. Who is God? What does he mean in my life? What does he mean in the cycle of world events? Where's God in this whole picture? Isaiah 42, I'm going to start reading in verse 5. Thus saith God the Lord, He that created the heavens and stretched them out. He that spread forth the earth and that which cometh out of it. He that giveth breath unto the people upon it, and spirit to them that walk therein. I, the Lord, have called thee in righteousness, and will hold thine hand, and will keep thee, and give thee for a covenant of the people, for a light to the Gentiles. Why? To open the blind eyes, to bring the prisoners from the prison, and them that sit in darkness out of the prison house. I am the Lord, that is my name, and my glory will I not give to another, and neither my praise to graven images. I'm going to drop down to verse 13 in between there. We're called to sing and praise God for who he is, and that's important too. But for the sake of time, I'm going to skip over those verses down to verse 13. The Lord shall go forth as a mighty man. He shall stir up jealousy like a man of war. He shall cry, yea, roar. He shall prevail against his enemies. I have long time holding my peace. I have been still and refrained myself. Now will I cry like a travailing woman. I will destroy and devour at once. I will make waste mountains and hills and dry up all their herbs, and I will make the rivers islands and will dry up the pools and will bring the blind by a way that they know not, and I will lead them in paths that they have not known. I will make darkness light before them and crooked things straight. These things will I do unto them and not forsake them. They shall be turned back, they shall be greatly ashamed that trust in graven images and that say to the molten images, ye are our gods. We'll stop there. Who is God? What is his plan for us? What is his plan for his people, his creation? Well, in verse 6, verse 5 talks about God's creation, God's marvelous creation. Verse 6, God says, I've called you in righteousness. Or we could say, I've called you out of sin. I've called you out of sin into righteousness and will hold thine hand. Now, that's a precious thought. What does a little child do that's terrified or frightened and they're with mom and dad or somebody they trust? It's the first thing they want to do. You know the answer. They want to reach out and they want to hold your hand. Every time I think of that, my mind goes back to a family that we know quite well, a young girl that has some unique challenges. And there's one time we were at their place, and somehow she was about 5 or 6 at the time. We're outside and ended up in the dark, and she wanted to go back in. And she came over to me, can you hold my hand till we go get back inside? You know, that's the thought here, this verse. And that's a precious thought. God's saying here, I've called you in righteousness, and I'm going to hold your hand, and I'm going to keep you. Precious thought. Security. Where else, what other safer place would you rather be? You know, that little girl was scared of the dark. She didn't know what was there. She had lots of fears. But if she could hold my hand, she was okay with that. God's saying the same thing to us. I'm going to hold your hand. I'm going to walk with you. Is God saying that there will be no problems, that there's going to be a bed of roses ahead, a pathway of roses? He's not saying that. He's saying, I'm just going to walk through it with you. To open blind eyes, to bring prisoners from the prison, and then to sit in darkness out of the prison house. He's going to just bring understanding, bring vision, bring sight to the blind. And that's what Jesus did physically and spiritually. Verse 8, Lord here means Jehovah, the self-existent one, the eternal one. Always was, always will be. He's always there, unmovable, self-existent. Now, don't ask me to explain that because I can't. I don't know the words to explain that. Self-existent. None of us are self-existent. We didn't choose our creation. We don't choose a lot of things. But God did. God always was. He's self-existent and eternal. And he will not allow anybody else to usurp his power. It doesn't matter who's the president of the United States is. Doesn't matter who the most powerful leader in Russia is and what his plans are. Doesn't matter. Our God will not be usurped by any of the power. He's not going to give his glory to another, verse 8 says. Psalm 103, verse 19 says, the Lord hath prepared his throne in the heavens, and his kingdom ruleth over all. There's one kingdom that's over top of all this. So why should we fear as we look into the future, as we consider and ponder what may lie ahead of us? Moving on, over in verse 16, 17, he again opens this idea of sight and leading and security. Lead them in paths they have not known, but God is always a part of this. He's always central. He's with it. He's walking through it with us. They shall be turned back, verse 17, they shall be greatly ashamed that trust in graven images. You know, where is our trust this evening? Is it in our way of life? Is it in our society? Is it in our checking account? Where is it? Where's our trust? And that's the question here in verse 17 that we need to consider. You know, there's a sense that sometimes I think here in 2022 where we get almost get the feeling that things just continue on and they will just always continue just as they were before. And maybe they will, maybe they won't. God only knows that. But whatever happens, thing I want to leave you with is that God is in control of it. So God in his sovereignty has set up earthly kingdoms for the well-being of mankind, for the structure of mankind, because when mankind left to his own, left himself, doesn't usually turn out well. And God knew that. That even all throughout time, back to the Jewish nation of Israel, God set up governments to relate to and to control and to give direction to the people of his creation. But they are still under his control. Nebuchadnezzar. Look at that example. We could turn to that, but I'm not going to do that for the sake of time. Yeah, he was under God's control. When he stepped out, when he took credit to himself for all the things that he decided he had done, God took all those things away from him and put him out the pasture as an animal. And this was the most powerful king of the then known world. Daniel 4:17 says, "This matter is by the decree of the watchers and the demand by the word of the holy ones, to the intent that the living may know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men and giveth it to whomsoever he will." Now get this. "And setteth up over it the basest of men." Now think about that. The basest of men. Now we look to our leaders. And I'm thinking of society and our national. We look to them to be men of honor, men of integrity. But God's saying here that sometimes, anyhow, he's going to give us the basest of the most common of men as the leaders. Think about that. Daniel 2:20-21, Daniel said, "Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his, and he changeth the times and the seasons, he removeth kings and setteth up kings." You get the picture, almost like it's a chessboard. I don't want to minimize God here to the game of chess, but he'll move these kings around in and out of position where he wants them to be as he chooses. So why should we fret and worry about who's in charge and what they're going to do, what their plans are, and whether it's the right or the wrong thing to do? God will remove each of them in his time, and God will set up others in his time. Proverbs 21:1, "The king's hand is in the heart of the Lord as the rivers of water. He turneth it whosoever he will." So not only does God put people in place, but he controls what they do. And go just take your mind back to Pharaoh and Moses and the children of Israel there. And how God just directed Pharaoh's heart, unbeknownst to him, even as he was denying God, God was still directing those things. God hardened his heart and took him through all those plagues of Egypt until he was ready to do what God had wanted him to do. And let God's people go. And God directed Pharaoh's heart. "Ah, Lord God, behold, thou hast made the heaven and the earth by thy great power and stretched out arm, and there is nothing too hard for thee." Jeremiah 32:17. God is in control. Yes, the earthly governments are in Satan's domain. Make no mistake about it. As God directs them, as God sets up leaders and takes them away, God is still controlling Satan's dominion. But that is not part of God's kingdom. We could go to Luke 4 and the temptation of Jesus, where the devil took Jesus up to a high mountain, showed unto him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time, and the devil said unto him, "All this power will I give thee, and the glory of them, for that is delivered unto me, and to whomsoever I will give it. If thou therefore wilt worship me, all shall be thine." That's part of Satan's dominion. The question, however, should be asked, or should be considered, was Satan telling the truth here? Could he actually give those, as he said he did? Pharaoh illustrated this when he told Moses, "Who is the Lord that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? I know not the Lord, neither will I let Israel go." God controlled the events. Moving on, what is socialism? What's capitalism? What's communism? All those big words. Well, socialism is an economic and political system whereby your stuff is owned by somebody else. In this case, under socialism, it generally is the government. It's either owned in common or the store owned by the states. In other words, you don't really own anything. What you have, you just use. You live where you're told to live. You have the stuff that's given to you. And if you need things, you go to the communal store or whatever, and you get it there of what is there. It's the concept that we all work together, we all do this together, and we all share the blessings. But unfortunately, too often in the annals of mankind, it becomes a sharing of scarcity. And now we'll look at that here in just a little bit. Margaret Thatcher, Great Britain, once said that the problem with socialism is that you eventually run out of other people's money. And that's just about the truth of it. That's at least one of its problems. And there's more of them, but socialism, it implies a social contract, a social gathering, a social understanding. However, it is that's a bit of a misnomer, because it is usually a top-down approach as directed by somebody that's in authority. I do want to mention this, that tonight, however, I am not here necessarily to proclaim the goodness and the wonderfulness of capitalism and the horribleness of socialism, and perhaps you're going to be disappointed by that. But I'll explain a little bit as I go on, because both are imperfect systems. Yes, capitalism unleashes mankind's potential in ways that nothing else, no other system does, but its fuel is greed. That's one of the main fuels of capitalism, is simply greed. And it harnesses that greed in a way that, for a period of time, can produce a lot of blessings. And if we look at the past 150, 200 years of American history, there have been a lot of advancements in a lot of areas of technology, of healthcare, of simply machines that make our life simpler and easier in some ways and much more complicated in other ways. That's a whole different subject. But capitalism is primarily fueled by greed, and then it tends to run to excess, and then it self-destructs, and I think that's perhaps what we're starting to see. Socialism, on the other hand, its dream is equality. Everyone's the same. We're all on the same level. You have too much, so I'm going to take from you and give it to this person over here that doesn't have quite enough, and we'll all be happy. Wonderful concept, isn't it? Isn't that the Christian concept of community a little bit? We all try to help each other. The wealthy brother helps the struggling brother a little bit, and maybe the struggling brother financially has some gifts that he can help the other one with, and it's a sharing together. We understand it, but there's one critical difference. I know I'm running ahead of myself here just a little bit, but the one critical difference between those two things is the one is motivated by the individual. The other is motivated by somebody in authority. And there's a big difference in how that works out. How many of you are familiar with the book Animal Farm? Hardly anybody. story of Animal Farm, and it's not a true story, obviously, as you understand when I just give you the quick overview of it, but it's a story told to make a point. But the author of the story tells about a farm over in Great Britain, and the animals rose up against the farmer, drove the farmer away, and took over the farm. And the animals are going to run the farm. And it's kind of a funny story at first, if you stop and think about it, because we know at first, that's not possible. But in the end, well, the pigs are the ones that kind of set the tone and lead out. And they had a number of rules that they kind of laid out that everybody just to understand how this whole process is going to work, and they're going to build this farm and farm together, and everyone's going to be the same. The rules are the same for everybody. But as time goes on, it starts to change. And the pigs decide that they're the leaders, so they need a few exceptions to this and a few more exceptions. Until at the end of the story, the pigs are living in the farmer's house. They're dressing in the farmer's clothes. They're sleeping in the farmer's bed, and the animals are looking, thinking, what's different? Nothing's changed. So it's not a reality in the big picture. And the reason for that is it never factors, socialism can never factor in the evil nature of mankind, the selfish nature of mankind. It assumes the best in all of us. And that's just not reality. We all know human nature quite well because we see it, we feel it dwelling inside our own hearts. And we are selfish at nature, and it's only when we allow God to do a work inside of us that it begins to change that nature from one that's just totally self-centered to one that cares about each other as much or more than myself. In Jamestown, Virginia, when the colonists first moved to America, this was the system that they set up. So they came moved to Jamestown. They set up their colony there, and they had a communal garden. You worked in that garden. The produce of that went into the communal store, and then you went in there to get what was there. And it didn't work. There was no private ownership of land. An early historian noted that it was a premium for idleness and just suited the drones, who promptly decided that it was unnecessary to work themselves since others would do it for them. And that's the sad, unfortunate part of that way of thinking. Again, it does not assume upon the sinful and selfish nature of mankind. After a number of years, that concept was abandoned. Private ownership of land and possessions was at first grudgingly permitted, and then it was encouraged, and finally it began to prosper. The Pilgrims in Plymouth, Massachusetts tried the same thing and had the same results. And coming a little closer home, more recent in history, we could look to the Soviet Union and the communistic structure that was there. And again, the same results. It was a sharing of scarcity. The common joke, well, I don't know how common it was, but the joke at that time that was shared among some of the people in that land was this: they pretend to pay us and we pretend to work. And of course, the result of that was not good. No societal or economic structure is perfect. Winston Churchill once said that democracy is the worst form of government, except for all the others. I think we could say the same thing with capitalism. It's the worst form of economic system, except for all the others. And the reason as I'm saying these things and kind of going through the difference of these different structures is I want us to understand, and I want to understand this myself as well, that we can tend to look to our system as perfect or as ideal. And I think that's maybe a trap. Because I don't know what all lies ahead. Perhaps God has his own, well, I know God has his own plan. But if we're stuck on it has to be a capitalistic structure for things to work, I think our challenges might have become more difficult. All economic structures have blessings and challenges for the Christian. They do. There's no doubt about it. The wealth and affluence that we experience today has its challenges and has its problems. You know, if we're not struggling, working for the week to make sure we have enough food for the next week, that gives us a whole lot of time to bicker, so forth. Idleness is the devil's workshop. There is some parts of that that the many blessings we have can also become a curse to us. The enemy of our souls will use any type of government to his advantage. It will try to use that. I think we just need to get a right perspective on this, that capitalism is not Christianity. And we need to accept that. Number three, even just listing my main points here, is this thought of American exceptionalism. Now, that's probably a new word to most of you, but it's basically the thought that America is unique and special in the history of the world. Roots of it goes back to 1630 when John Winthrop wrote this to his fellow Puritan colonists, that we shall be as a city upon a hill. The eyes of all people are upon us. And the belief that America is unique and special and that Americans are special people of God. And we say, no, that's not a part of us. But I wonder sometimes perhaps how much that thinking does influence our thought. Back in the 1800s, this gave rise to a concept known as manifest destiny. And that was the idea that the United States as a Christian nation was destined by God to expand its dominion and spread democracy and capitalism across a total North American continent. This belief was a driving force in the westward expansion and in the Go West, some of the Indian Wars, and some of the other events of that time, because America was carrying the torch of God under the banner of Christianity. And as we talked about this morning, there was a lot of bloodshed under that banner. As a Christians, as Anabaptists, this is a belief we need to stay pretty far away from, because America is not special. Maybe that's a shocking thought to you. Too many of us, myself included, studied history from a Protestant viewpoint, where this thought process is highly lifted up. I do not believe in the annals of history the United States is really anything that much more special than many of the others. If it was, then I have to ask you, those of you that are historians anyhow, what happened to Rome? Because Rome was just as Christian at one point as what America is today. And yet it fell eventually. If we adopt this belief that America is exceptional, are we not endorsing then what this country does that we live in? Are we endorsing that? And taking that another step further, then shouldn't we vote to help further this? Since America is exceptional and this is all part of God's plan, America is a big part of God's plan, then shouldn't we vote to put good leaders in place to help keep the plan moving forward? You see the trap in this? I'll take it a step further. Shouldn't we then, when this nation that we live in is threatened, should we then take up some guns and weapons to defend it? I think we need to be very careful about this and think about this. We have developed, I believe, as a people, somewhat this thought that, yes, we are special as Americans, as Christians in America. I want to say here tonight that I don't think we are. I don't think we're any more special than anybody else in times past. What did that verse we read in Isaiah 42:17, they shall be turned back, they shall be greatly ashamed that trust in graven images. Can this view of America almost be idolatry? I wonder. The U.S. was founded on a belief that all people are created equal and are endowed by their Creator with permanent rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And we have extolled those virtues. But you know what? What has America done with those things? Freedom and liberty and the pursuit of happiness have all become America's gods. They have used those things to create idols out of them. And those are leading men and women away from God. That's perhaps a new thought to you. But I just urge you to consider that. Today, the rise in homosexuality, LGBTQ+, abortion, divorce and remarriage, undress, are all a product of the thinking that no one can tell me what to do if it brings me happiness. You see the result of that? It brings me happiness. And that's guaranteed to me by the American Constitution, that this brings me happiness, and so you have no right to speak against it. Christians have no right to call that sin, because it's my happiness. Those things have become a god in America today. And I wonder if that thought process affects us. Does that affect us? It does. Our culture affects us perhaps more than we like to think, and more than we even realize how much we're affected by that culture. Does this pursuit of these things, of happiness, in whatever way I choose, does that fit in with a humble spirit, with an accountable church brotherhood? I don't believe it does. Does the don't tread on me philosophy belong to a follower of Jesus? Wasn't that part of brotherhood? Sometimes we have to step on each other's toes. And we do it kindly. We try to do it lovingly. But sometimes we have to. Sometimes you may have to step on my toes. And that's okay. But the don't tread on me philosophy that has been born out of these three things, this pursuit of happiness, this pursuit of liberty, this pursuit of freedom, can and has affected us, I believe. The USA that we live in is no Christian nation. It never was. And we better readjust our thinking on this. The things I already mentioned, the wars of the past, the Civil War and the horribleness of it, and the bloodshed between families. There was fathers that picked up guns and shot at their sons. I guess I don't know if a literal story that happened, but there were families that were divided by that thing, by that war. And in a sense, they were. The U.S. as a nation has worshipped the god of sports, entertainment, and yes, the god of science. But I do want to also say that this nation has been a blessing to us. I don't want to paint this as all negative. The U.S. has been a blessing. The allowance of religious freedom has allowed God's people to prosper financially, and yes, I believe spiritually as well. Because when our ancestors came here, they were just, can I say, about at the end of their rope. No, God was still there. God was still directing. God was still in control of it. But they had been hit pretty hard by the events. In certain areas of Switzerland, they'd only, this Anabaptist people had almost been totally wiped out. And just a little interesting story, there were several of the original Anabaptists who were put in prison. It was Conrad Grebel and Felix Mons and a couple other those. It's a group of them, and anyhow, they managed to escape. And after they got out of the castle where they were held prisoner, one of them said to them, and it's not recorded, I believe, who said it, but one of them asked, "Where do we go from here?" And one of the group joked and said, "Maybe we should go to the land of the Red Indians across the ocean." Or he thought it was a joke, but actually his spiritual ancestors, their spiritual ancestors, would actually do that and prosper there in many ways. So America has been a blessing, and the religious freedom has been a blessing to us, but let us not allow that to take our eyes off of God and allow the affluence of the times to blur our vision. Christian concept of community and socialism do have a lot in common, and I mentioned that a little bit earlier. The sharing together of the blessings, of the fruits of labor. But again, I want to point out that the difference is that socialism is authoritarian. It's put top down. This is what you must do. Whereas our Christian brotherhoods, it's a place where you join, and you can be here. And no one is forcing you to be here. You're not forced to be here. You may leave and choose a different church. I'm not encouraging you to do that. Please don't misunderstand me. But we have always believed in voluntary church membership. And this concept of community is something we choose to engage in and choose to enter in on, to lift up our brother when the time comes. And maybe sometimes he'll have to come and lift us up. So this Christian concept of community and the concept of socialism are very, very similar, but yet very, very different. All right, what are some current socialistic challenges and threats? Getting a little bit more practical here. Well, society calls this the social safety net. That's the first thing I wanted to look at. The social safety net, this idea that from birth to death, there's help all along the way from the government. Government gives money, government gives aid in various ways, mostly through money. Here's the question. Why do governments tend to move towards socialism? Why do they tend to move that way? To where instead of the individual and the family being the support group, the government becomes that. Why do they go that way? And I wonder if maybe we have failed first. It's so easy to sit here and point the finger at the governor, Congress, the president, whatever, for what they're doing wrong. And I wonder, maybe it's because we failed first. Has family and church and community failed first? And so government tries to fill a role that it can no way fill. I wonder. At best, it's at least a challenging thought to ask if we're doing what we should be doing. And so the government does not feel the need to step in and try to fill that role. Family and church, in that order, are what God set up as a social safety net. Family and church in that order. How good of a job are we doing at home and with our families? And how easy are we going to just hand that over and allow the government to do that for us? Because it cannot do that near as well as a family and church can, because it's so far removed from it. This right here is one of the most important things in your Christian life. Maybe I'm putting that too strongly, and you may disagree with me on that, but church is extremely important to this. And so I want to challenge you, and no, your leaders did not tell me, none of them mentioned that they wanted me to say this. But when church is here, are you here? When it's Wednesday evening prayer meetings, are you here? When it's Sunday morning, Sunday evenings, are you here? No, I recognize the plans take us away. I'm not in my home church either this morning. But is it so easy to just sit at home and it'll just happen all right without me? It's easy to do that, but it's a trap, because here together is where we lift each other up and help each other down life's pathway. How well are we doing in building that relationship with our church people? It's a challenging question, and then if we fail, then government feels like it needs to step in. And when that happens, so the cradle to grave care happens, along with that comes one important thing, one critical thing, and that is control. With money comes control. So government gives you money, and it has a right to ask and demand what you do with it. I guess I'm getting ahead of myself again. With money comes control. Just hold that thought. So when government does all these things for us, it takes away from individual responsibility and initiative. I don't have to work. I don't have to put myself out there, because the government's just simply going to take care of me. And that is a contrast with scriptural principles of taking care and providing for their own. And that's something, as I look at our Amish communities, one thing I appreciate about them. And we can always point fingers at other church groups and point out what's wrong. That's so easy to do. And I've been guilty of that myself. But I like to look at them and look at the things they do right and say, what can I learn from that? But in caring for their own, The dotty house beside the main house where grandpa and grandma live out the rest of their years, they're putting this into action. Not handing it over to somebody else, but they're taking care of their own. Their family, their parents are their individual responsibility, and they're going to take care of them. And I think it's a blessing. I think it's something we can learn from them. Another threat is our Christian day schools. As our socialistic government continues to press in upon us with directives and instructions, we can expect this to come right in to start cutting right into our schools, and in some cases has already happened. Do we still have the burden this evening to teach our own children? Is that burden still there? Are we getting weary of it? It takes a lot of work. I've been on a school board. It takes a lot of work to run a school and a lot of money. And if you're like Pennsylvania here, we pay property taxes, fall school taxes to my local school, and then I pay again to send my children to our school. So there's a financial hit with that that comes with that. And it would be so much cheaper to send my children down to the public school. So have we lost the burden? Have we lost the vision of our own schools? I wonder. At times, if there's things we can do to shore it up, can we pay our teachers a little bit better? Can we have some more long-term teachers that dedicate their lives to this? And I haven't done that. But I hope we still have that burden and aren't getting weary of the way. You know, we all, in the past number of years, have lived pretty prosperously. Money has been flowing. Can our teachers get a share of that? Have our teachers gotten a share of that? I don't know your situation here, so I'm just speaking freely in my mind, and you can adjust that or tweak that as with your situation. Perhaps your teachers are already the best paid teachers in the Anabaptist community. I don't know. I didn't ask. Just something to consider. The other thing that comes along with this is we could allow some government money to start flowing into our schools, and then we could pay our teachers more, and everyone would be the happier, maybe. But again, I remind you that with money comes control. And as we allow that, we are allowing the government to control our schools. And if we look at the public school systems, at least in our area, I would shudder to send my children there. I think that's probably the case for most public school systems across America. As America has abandoned and is abandoning God, the public school system is failing badly. So let's not lose the vision for our Christian day schools. Number four, health care. Same thing applies here. If we accept government help for our medical bills, then we can expect some control and some directives and some regulations along with that. And our Canadian churches have struggled with this because that's the system they live under, where you go to the doctor and you go to the hospital and your bill is paid for you. What's interestingly enough is that has been used against some of the churches anyhow up there, that since we're paying your bills, you dare not go to church because you're going to spread COVID and then we're going to have to pay for it. Well, that sort of actually makes logical sense, doesn't it? They're paying your bills, so they have a right to regulate your life and what you may do and what you may not do. With money comes control. Remember that. I do believe, thinking of the public school system, thinking of the healthcare system, there are a lot of good, dedicated, caring people that work in those systems, and I don't want to demean or any of those. But we do have to remember that they do not share our vision. They do not necessarily share all of our values. How much do we want to allow them to speak into and control our lives? Number five is a weakness or understanding of the two kingdom teaching of Jesus. Now, this tug of war between the two kingdoms has existed all the way back through time. Satan entered the garden, talked to Eve. Goes all the way back to there. Satan has his kingdom. God has his kingdom. And this tug of war between the two of them has been going for centuries, millennium, and we are caught in the middle. And we're forced to choose which side, which kingdom is ours. Each of those kingdoms is vying for your affection. Each of them wants your interest, your time, your attention, your work. Which kingdom have you adopted? Which kingdom have you chosen? We know which one's going to ultimately prevail. Are you on the winning side? We are ambassadors for Christ, 2 Corinthians 5:20. An ambassador is one who represents another country. That's what we're here for, to represent a godly country, to represent something that this world is not used to seeing, where these group of people actually come together sit together, share together, help each other. Just give of their time and their money and their talents just to help other people. That's getting more and more almost an unknown thing, I believe, in our society, or at least it's getting less and less. And maybe I just don't know enough of those that's out there that are doing that. But ambassadors for a heavenly kingdom. You know, the Chinese ambassador to the United States doesn't vote in our elections. Yes, he goes to the eating places and he lives just like he was a part of this, but he's not. And it's just like us today. Neither would he take up arms to fight for the country he's living in. But he's an ambassador of something different, representing something different. As this socialistic pressure continues to bear upon us, it's so easy, and I'm talking to myself here tonight, it's so easy to get emotionally involved with what's happening. I enjoy history. I enjoy current events. I probably stay a little bit too up to date on current events. I'll confess that to you tonight. And it's so easy to start getting emotionally involved in what's happening. But you know what the next step is? The next step is I want to actually get involved. And at that point, to get involved in that political process, to try to slow it down or change directions and fix the problems. But as we looked at this morning, those tools are not ours. How concerned am I with what happens in Congress, about who gets elected? And here's one critical test. What pronouns do you use when you're talking about the government of the land you live in? Is it we and my and our, or is it they and them? That is a critical test. And I have tried hard over the years to correct my speech on that. It's not my nation. It's the nation I live in, nation I dwell in. It's not mine. You know, Peter's words in Matthew 26:73 betrayed him when he was standing outside Pilate's hall, and whoever it was came up to him and said, "Yes, are you also from Galilee? Because you sound like it. Your speech betrays you. Does your speech betray you this evening?" This has been back 2 years or so ago, when near the end of President Trump's term in office, he had nominated Amy Barrett to the Supreme Court. And this was a contentious issue for any of you that followed this whole process. But I was with a person from one of our Mennonite communities, and he made a comment over that time that struck me, stood out to me. And this was after she was confirmed to sit on the Supreme Court, and he said, "We finally got our Supreme Court justice." We did? Did we? Well, the United States got their Supreme Court justice. But did we get it? That to me is a red flag. We believe in two kingdoms. There's God's kingdom, and there's a kingdom of this world. Now, our Protestant friends would tell us that there's both. It's a dual citizenship. It's both. I'm sorry. My God does not allow other gods in there. He wants him and him alone. Just briefly here at the end. Yes, we started off with looking at the sovereignty of God and how God overrules in all these events, and we really don't need to fear. We've looked at socialism, what it is, what it does, how it can affect us. But you know what? There's perhaps some bigger threats than this. And I just want to just perhaps refocus our minds just a little bit on that. And I think one of the biggest threats we face, and it is connected to this subject, is how to deal with them. And this is going to vary from this area to Pennsylvania to Pensacola, Florida, to wherever our churches are all scattered about. There's going to be different things that come in here, and we're going to have some questions to answer. And we're not all going to think the same thing, are we? We're going to have differences of opinion how to relate to these things. And if 2020 didn't show us that for sure, I'm not sure what else would. But we didn't all agree on how to handle that, did we? When should we open church? Should we open church? Shouldn't we have church? Should we stay home? What do we do? I'm sure, just your congregation here was just like ours. We didn't all agree on how we should do that. And I think the biggest threat to me in all this, over and above the whole socialistic threat itself, is disunity because of disagreement on how to handle these questions. We have not suffered real persecution. But when those things come, we're not all going to agree on how to relate to them. So what are you going to do with that? Are you going to allow those things to divide you? To build walls between you? To hold each other at arm's length? I think that's probably one of the biggest dangers in this whole subject, is how we will relate to those of us, right amongst us, that don't see it the same way I do it. And then you know how it tends to be when this brother over here doesn't see things quite the way I do. When Nelson doesn't see things quite the way I do, then I want to move over here because I got to balance him off a little bit, when really I'm not there in my own thinking at all. And we can so quickly do that. This brother's or sister's a little off balance over here, so I'll move over here to counteract them, and suddenly we're worlds apart. But really, actually, we're not that far apart. So let's be careful on that. Let's be open, let's be willing to share, and let's be willing to accept the fact that I may not have it right, and I need my brothers and sisters to help me walk through these things and answer some of these questions. And perhaps what's decided isn't the way I think it should be. And I'll just bluntly say right here, I thought it took us a long time to get back to church. We would have gone back a whole lot sooner if it was up to me, but it wasn't up to me. It was a brotherhood choice, and so we worked with that. But that, I think, is the biggest threat of all, or one of the biggest threats of all, is the disunity that can so quickly come when we disagree. Can we disagree as brethren? We can. I know we can, but too often we don't. Moral breakdown of society that's walking right into the church so easily. Divorce and remarriage almost seems normal these days because of all the other perversions. Communication, the pluses and minuses of that, wealth and prosperity, and I could go on. Relating to the rise in socialism, I do believe that these challenges will press in upon us more and more. I believe that from a historical perspective. That has been the nature of that, of governments like this. But Jesus said, John 16:33, "These things have I spoken unto you, that in me ye might have peace. In the world ye shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world." And that's the sentiment I want to leave with you all tonight. We started off with that thought that God is sovereign. God controls the events. God controls the nations. God controls the leaders of the nations. God controls the people that live inside those nations. But those people have choices to make, and unfortunately we live in a society that is turning its back on God, turning its back on religion, on religious values, or at least Christian values. But Jesus is saying, I've overcome the world. Be not afraid. Be of good cheer. John 12:26, "If any man serve me, let him follow me, and where I am, there shall also my servant be. If any man serve me, him will my Father honor." I'll leave you with one question. Does God have something he wants to accomplish by allowing socialism to come into our society? Does God have something he wants to accomplish by that? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. But it was a sobering one for me to stop and consider because, yes, I have been too many times guilty of complaining about those things and just wishing some of those things would just stay away. But, you know, God's in control of that. God controls the nations and the people that are in them. God is in control of all that. So if God has something to accomplish, why should I stand in the way? Let's allow God to work as he sees best, because he sees that picture and he sees the future in ways that we can't even comprehend. God said Isaiah, somewhere back in Isaiah, I forget the passage, where my thoughts are higher than your thoughts and my ways than your ways. What are God's ways to this? I don't know. But I trust that together we can follow him faithfully, no matter what tests may come, and they will come. But may we look to each other and look to God for strength and wisdom and understanding to face them. Let's listen for prayer.